Hello, friends. Welcome back to Dentistry Unmasked. I am David Rice, chief editor over at Dentistry IQ with, as usual.
Hey, everybody. Pam Maragliano-Muniz, chief editor for Dental Economics Magazine. David, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty excited because there's some things happening in the less than like safe space in dentistry. And it feels like we keep hearing them over and over and over again. So we have a great guest today, Pam, don't we?
I think this is going to be one of our best episodes. So I'm glad you guys tuned in because this is a serious topic, actually. And I know David and I always try to make light and like bring like a positive spin on things, but there's just some things in dentistry that are absolutely damn scary. And just about a little over a month ago, we had two major tragedies in dentistry. In New Orleans, Dr. Katie Tran was stabbed in the face by a disgruntled ex-patient of hers. And this was in, I think, early February. And she, I don't know at this point, but she might, if she hasn't already, lost an eye over it. And later in February in San Diego, Dr. Ben Haruni was shot and killed by a disgruntled patient in February. And so David and I were lamenting on what a tragedy this is and how sad this is. But we also feel very privileged that we have the ability to speak about this publicly. So we are so thrilled to bring on our guest this week. So we've got retired Lieutenant Frank Borelli with us, who's also the co-host of a wickedly successful podcast called Officer Roll Call. Frank, welcome.
Good morning. How are you guys both doing today?
So good.
So glad you're here.
I'm really glad to be here. It's amazing the number of people that think they work in a safe space and they assume an awful lot and they don't realize the potentials that is there for bad people to do bad things. It's a shame to hear about those two dentists, and I'm not sure much can be done about either one, but I'm looking forward to talking about all the different options from the physical security side to the reading behavior stuff. And honestly, sometimes unfortunately, to be able to protect yourself means, don't you all take our wait? Are you all doctors? Did you take the Hippocratic Oath of first do no harm? Well, I hate to tell you this, but sometimes to protect yourself, you're going to do a lot of harm, and it's the only way to do it. But we'll talk about that too. I'm really glad to be here, and thank you for having me.
So, okay, I feel like, you know, we're practice owners. And so I know, you know, my door is always open. The second the first person walks in, we've got a front door that's unlocked, a back door that's unlocked. And, you know, we just sort of, you know, float through our day. And we know our patients. There's some that are a little, I mean, I'm just going to say it. Like, there's some people that are just a little weird. And there's, you know, but I don't really have any patients that scare me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure everybody says their dentist is weird too. So right back at you, people. But anyway, you know, we hear these tragedies, and I feel like, you know, are there things that we can do as we move forward from something? Like, can we learn something from this? Should we be, are there things we should do? I mean, there are things we should do to protect ourselves. So like, lay it on us.
So I said something about physical security, and you said your front door is always open and your back door is always open. And certainly you got to worry about things like fire code, right? You can't lock the door so nobody can get out. But if you can control access in, you've at least reduced your potential victim pool. So, I mean, the guy that came in with a gun and wanted to just shoot a doctor, he's not the guy I'm worried about. That's bad. But I'm worried about the guy that doesn't like the doctor and somehow thinks he's going to save all of the rest of the patients from this doctor's hell. So he walks into your greeting, your waiting room, and just kills all your patients, and then comes through your door and kills your receptionist and your billing specialist and finds all your hygienists and everything else. That's the person that really needs to be stopped before they ever get into a second door. So maybe this is only how it is in Maryland. When I go to my dentist, and I love my dentist, her actual name is Friend. Dr. Friend is awesomely friendly until I'm in the chair, like, and then it's no dentist is friendly. Sorry, guys. When I'm in the chair, my jaw is unhinged. None of you all are friendly. But you go in her greeting area and you have a counter that you would literally have to jump over to get into the secured space. The door that goes back to her treatment area, all of the offices and everything, is a cipher lock. I can't get through that door. Somebody has to open that door for me. So that's an access control point that limits potential for the penetration to do the harm. Her back door, her exit, is a push bar locked door, so nobody can come in her back door. You can go out the back door without pause, but nobody can come in the back door. And that's a great thing too. Where that becomes a problem is, and I don't know if y'all remember the Aurora Theater shooting that happened several years ago, when somebody decides to prop open a door, or the infamous business office where everybody props open the back door to go smoke right outside the back door. And then nobody closes it when they come in, right? The first barrier has to be, and I know you guys have to worry about making everybody feel welcome and you want them to come in and all that. Yeah, that's nice. You're welcome into my house after I've checked you out. Your office is your responsibility for everybody there. My first step would be access control. You got to have the front door open, certainly, but there ought to be an access control point before they can come back into other secured spaces. And that back door should never just be unlocked where anybody can come in. That, to me, that's just a bad idea.
So Pam, I have a question for you. You know, we're in different parts of the country, and I'm sure our, you know, people are people, but our patient pools are a little different. Like, when you hear that, for you in your practice, do you feel like you can maybe realistically do something different with your front door access? I mean, back door is probably a little bit easier to manage, but front door access, or do you feel like, oh my gosh, what would people think?
Oh, I don't care what people think. So, and I mean, honestly, I feel like...
Love that outlook. I love that outlook.
Yeah, no, I don't, because I feel like there's certain things I won't apologize for. And I tell patients that, you know, I don't apologize for being the most aggressive in my dental hygiene chair. So if we can prevent them from ever needing to visit me in the back, not sorry about that. And I'm not sorry about trying to keep people safe. Having said that, I am a dentist, and I feel like, you know, in nature, like, we're just kind of tuned in to be like, well, here's why I can't do it before I can tell you I can do it. And I'm in, even though I own my two spaces, I'm in a condo. So I'm hearing you say this about the back door, and I'm imagining calling my property manager saying, okay, I want to change my back door because I want it to be something you can push out, and them tell me no.
Don't make it a phone call. Send them an email that says, because of risk management and potential liability, I want to do this. And then if they tell you you can't, all of that liability and risk goes to them. It transfers to them because you can document it, right? I was raised by a lawyer who became a judge, so I learned how to think like a lawyer, which is really bad most of the time. But this is one of those times it's really great. Don't call. Make it a documented thing. And then when he says no, say, okay, then understand, I'm saving this documentation. You're accepting all of the vicarious liability and the risk. You're the one that's preventing me from protecting my patients. So going forward, I'm going to hold you responsible for the safety of everybody in my office. And watch him backpedal. Watch him fall over his feet trying to get you a new back door.
Great.
I love that.
So
yeah, no.
Simple to do. Send the email rather than make the call and put yourself in a position of strength.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But no, I mean, currently, if you get in my front door, you can literally access any part of my office. You can just like walk right in. And
you know, and it's a shame that we have to think that way, right? And different parts of the country, different regions, different outlooks. excuse me, my wife's family is from this little tiny place called Humboldt, Iowa, where there's a whopping 5,000 people and one stoplight, and people still leave guns sitting in the windows of their pickup truck at the grocery store with the windows open, and nobody cares, right? And we all think, okay, places like that, do I really have to worry about locking my back door? Do I really have to worry about my front door? That is exactly how everybody in Littleton, Colorado felt in March of 1999, before two high school students went to Columbine High School and started killing people. And then everybody realized, we don't know where it's going to happen. We don't know what the ages of the people are going to be. I think a lot about active shooter events, right? So you're talking about one patient attacking one doctor. And we definitely need to talk about how that one doctor can be better protected, what they can do. But if you're talking about physical security and you're talking about a holistic approach to the office, access control and protecting everybody within that space has to be where you start.
That, another great point. I know, and I've been guilty of it in the past, thinking like, oh, well, I'm in, you know, XYZ suburb of, you know, Buffalo, New York. So that doesn't happen here. And it's funny. I remember a story where I was in Marble Falls, Texas, did the automatic, like, lock my doors at a friend's house. And he looked at me, he's like, did you just lock your car door? I'm like, yeah. He's like, we shoot people in Texas if they rob things. You don't have to worry about that here, which I'm reading loud and clear from you, like, we all need to know that this can happen at any point in time. And we need to prepare for that, despite our, like, I don't know, Pollyanna outlook on life, maybe.
So I'm gonna equate this. I used to teach rape awareness and prevention classes. And I used to have women come into the class and their outlook was, well, I'm just really here because somebody told me I ought to take this class and I really don't think it can ever happen. And the worst words, and I've said this to chiefs all over the country, the worst words you can say is, that won't ever happen here. I live in that won't happen here, USA. Let me tell you how many different cities have been that won't happen here, USA. And one of them's Blacksburg, Virginia. Virginia Tech was one of the worst school attacks we've seen. And what do they believe? It won't happen here. So we attitude adjustments probably before physical security, but we all got to get it.
Well, that brings me to another point. So I'm in Salem, Massachusetts. And so inside the four walls of my practice, it feels very safe. I know my patients for the most part, you know, basically new patients or just friends we haven't met yet. You know, we really get to know our patients. So from that perspective, I don't necessarily worry, but you know, you walk down the street and there's a couple blocks over and there's a lot of creepers around there. And so, and I know my poor team have to like hop over homeless people sometimes to walk into our door. I mean, so there's some things that, you know, obviously, at least in my town, that certainly there are some safety precautions, but let's talk about the people themselves, because I know I'm not usually lost for words, but I remember being like flat out, I didn't know what to say. Like I was stumped when I interviewed David Harris. He's an embezzlement guy. And he was telling me a story about a team member that was embezzling from the dentist. The dentist was catching on and that team member stabbed the dentist to death. And I mean, once again, hopefully there's some character traits that we can, as practice owners, as people, identify as potential threats to maybe do what we need to do to mitigate that threat. Can we talk about the people themselves?
So 95% of the times, you're absolutely right. Creepers are identifiable. They're easy to see. The weirdos, I don't know the right verbiage because they've always, for cops, they're just always the suspect. They're always the subject. They're always, you know, I got called to deal with this guy, right? Or this woman. But it's kind of hard to explain without looking at some really weird stuff like serial killers. Most of the serial killers that we've documented and caught in the world, people thought they were really friendly, personable, great people. That's how they lured in their victims, right? There's an old joke about I picked up a hitchhiker and we're driving down the road and finally he looked at me. He went, aren't you worried about picking up a potential serial killer? And I answered, no, the chances of there being two of us in the same truck are slim to none. You know, it's a joke, but it's the reality. So yeah. The 95% of your patients that you know, that you're comfortable with, you have no problems with, fantastic. You all are both doctors. The ones, and it's hard to articulate, the ones you need to worry about are the ones that seem nervous constantly, that have the busy eyes, that are sweating for no good reason. And that probably happens a lot in a dentist office. I know I do. I mean, it's just an uncomfortable space, right? White coat syndrome's a thing, whatever. The people who don't really want to get in your chair. None of us want to, but we all do it. But the guy that really, really doesn't want to get in the chair, that doesn't want to surrender the control, that doesn't want to put himself or herself in a position of submission, right? And when you think about it, when I put myself in your chair and I lay back and I open my mouth, I am as vulnerable as I can possibly get. The person who doesn't want to go there, that doesn't want to surrender that control, that you're going to have to fight to take that control from, you don't want them in your chair. You don't want them in your office. Weird fun fact, when you meet new patients, you shake hands with them. Is that a safe assumption?
Yes.
When you shake hands with them, hopefully it's a nice firm handshake, right? When your hands go together, your thumb web goes all the way in, you get a firm grasp, your hand stays vertical, and you shake their hand. When you have the patient that shakes your hand and turns their hand over on top of yours, they are showing dominance. It's a thing criminals do in prison. It's a psychological, I'm on top of you, I'm in control. That you don't want that person in your chair. You just don't. They are telling you without telling you, nope, you answer to me and I own you in this moment. It's a bad place to be.
I never paid attention to that.
Right. And I never would have accepted I was a cop. And I can't tell you how many times I met people on the street and I'd go to shake their hand and they would try to turn my wrist. I'm not doing that. And then the look on their face would change.
Okay.
And then they would step back. Yeah. Okay. Now we know where we're both standing. You thought you were going there. I'm not letting you go in there. This is a different conversation now. The Israelis have a fantastic behavioral school, and I don't know what the FBI's put out about it, just for behaviors that that are obvious for not innocent people. If you have children, you've seen this, right? The 2, 3, 4, 5 year olds that don't want to get caught doing things. They don't make eye contact. They look at the ground. They talk softly, or they are talk unreasonably loud. They don't like being touched if they don't have to be touched. They don't want you within arm's reach if you don't have to be within arm's reach, and they hate to be put in positions of submission. Any of those things going on with a new patient, maybe you don't want them as a patient.
So if we sense that, if our spidey sense goes up and we're like, this is one of those people, how do we best safely handle that? And maybe two-part question. How do we best safely handle it if it's Pam or I as the practice owner and the leader? And then maybe after that, what happens if a team member comes up to us and says like, hey, I just worked on this Dave Rice guy and
Oh, I love that you use that name, because my chief of police's name is Dave Rice. So, and I don't know what you all have as far as protocols or emergencies. If you have a patient that you need to do something, but you don't want the patient to realize what's going on, do you all have like code words or systems that you can execute? Okay, then you need one for this.
Okay.
Right? When you've got that, holy crap, I don't want this person in here, the hair standing up on the back of my neck, I just want to back up and put up my hands in defense. There needs to be something you can say to your staff where your staff understands this, that we need to get this guy out of here. Some fictional emergency needs to happen where you're needed immediately and he'll have to reschedule and he's being invited to leave. There has to be a way of not pressing that person to the point of where they emotionally break or they feel accused. And that's the big balance, right? But if you have that fictitious thing, that the code words or whatever it is, and then that person's got to go. And then afterwards, you have the conversation with your staff. Like, there's just never going to be an appointment time available for that person. You don't want them back. They refer them to somebody else. Refer them to the dentist that you know that's like 6'6 and 340 pounds, and it was a special forces surgeon. Let him go get in that guy's chair.
So okay, when I was so young and dumb. Go ahead, Pam.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, when I was young and dumb in my late 20s and walked out to that patient in the reception area and said, you have 30 seconds to leave or I'm going to help you leave, that was a bad idea.
Not if you could actually do it. No.
Young and dumb. I don't know.
Well, Pam looks very thoughtful. Funny. She looks like she's overwhelmed with this.
Well, no. So it's so interesting. So my family owns a construction company, and it's just a very different demographic, very different way you speak to people, very, all of it's very different. And so it wasn't like, it's interesting that I've been on the phone with my brother where like he slams the phone down and he's yelling, get the, and he's like, whatever. And then comes back, like heart rate's not even up. And he's like, so, all right, what's going on with Senorita? You know, like whatever, like literally whatever. So like in my, like, I know in my heart, because like that's in my DNA, that like, I know I can flip in a second and be like, you need to get the F out of here. But I don't know if I have the, like, if I'm smooth enough to do it in a nice way, especially if I'm feeling, you know, concerned or scared, or if somebody, or if something weird happens. So I was going to say, can we like role play for a second here? Because I feel like people need to hear like something they can like leave with and something they can say.
This is not a child friendly episode, is it? Like, do we have to worry about role playing?
Well, no, I'm wondering if she realizes she's asking me to be professional and diplomatic. And I,
no, I'm not asking you to be professional and diplomatic.
I'm not, anyway.
No, I'm not asking for that at all.
Whatever you want to do.
No, so okay, so say you know, we have this new patient.
I'll give you one better. I use a perfect real life example. My experience: I was 22 years old, and I had to go have my wisdom teeth extracted. Okay, I had just come out of the Army. I was more than willing to fight any time for any reason. I couldn't have cared less. And I'm in this oral surgeon's chair, and he says, "Okay, I'm going to give you a local." And I'm going to do it. And I went, wait a minute, you're going to cut two of my teeth out of my head. You have to take a scalpel to my mouth. And he's like, yes. I'm like, put me to sleep. And he said, why would I want to put you to sleep? And I said, because if you put that in my mouth and I taste blood, I'm killing you with it. Put me to sleep. Now, that's pretty brutally honest and upfront. And he didn't have a problem. He put this little thing on my nose. He said, count backwards from 100. I remember 98. And then I was waking up in the other room. And that's fantastic because you're going to win that fight every time if I'm out. That's cool. But true live, actual, a patient in a chair going, no, doc, I will kill you, happened. And I'd have flicked off if he had tried to do that with a local.
Yeah.
We'll play anything you want. I'm sorry. I wanted to share that story. I have a lot of fun telling that story.
That's a good story. But I feel like that is like, at least you're telling me. So now I can do what I need to do with that information. But I feel like you get that patient that you're like, I can't put my finger on it. I'm just super uncomfortable. And I don't want them in here. So say, you know, and you know, like we've all had it where, you know, you're whoever's at your front desk hands you paperwork and they like have this look in their eye, like, you know, and then you're like, well, you know, I'm a healthcare provider. I need to provide care to all, or, you know, whatever. And then this person is in the office and you're now sitting here listening to them and you're like, oh, no, they need to go. How do, like,
so that's the person that just handed you the paper or the hygienist. You say, yeah. Hey, Darlene, I need you to check the file on such and such because I don't remember this and it might be that. And the words have to be such that they can't actually have real meaning. All it can possibly mean is we need to get this guy out of the chair because he's really making me nervous and we need him gone. Right. But you got to be 100% calm. You got to be the, if you let the person in your chair know that you're nervous, that might work against you. Right. So you still have to be in the control and the professional demeanor and whatever your code phraseology is. And then Darlene comes back and she's like, okay, here's this. And you, oh, damn it. Okay. Look, sir, I'm really sorry. And I hate to do this, but I have to go deal with this. So we're going to get you cleaned back up and we're going to reschedule your appointment. If you're interested in coming back, we totally understand if you want to change different practice, whatever, but we don't have any choice in this. Thanks very much. And then you like scoot around the corner, whatever. They're there for dental care. If there's no dental care to be given, then they might as well leave. If they're there to do harm, you've put your entire staff on alert that this person might not be a friendly person. And now at least everybody's got their guard up till the guy's out the door. And Okay. Here's the bad part. Here's a really bad part. I'm going to tell you all this and I want you to keep it in mind. It's one of the meanest things I will say in this entire conversation. You have so many weapons in your offices. You have weapons that just scare the hell out. I've been cut with straight razors. Scalpels scare the piss out of me. I hate those things. All of y'all have them. Dental picks? Even those things can be used to kill people. You all have so many weapons. Your staff needs to understand that if somebody presents a physical threat, that they absolutely 100% should defend themselves as violently as they have to until that threat has been neutralized. Yes.
So that was going to bring me to
clean up the blood when you're done.
That was going to bring me to another point. Now, obviously, the United States is a very big country, and obviously there's different opinions about this topic. But what if you are in a state where somebody, say, on your team or you yourself or whatever, can carry a weapon? Is that something that's reasonable to have in a dental office?
All right. I have to preface this with, I am one of the most pro Second Amendment people you will ever meet. All right. I haven't left my house in 42 years without a firearm on my person, with the exception of going to the beach, because I can't hide a gun in my bathing suit. I have left my house and run into people that I've arrested miles and miles away. If you have staff members legally who can carry, who are willing to take the training, I would encourage every place that has controlled narcotics in their possession to have somebody who's armed. My wife runs a drugstore. It's a major chain. I'm not going to name it. But she's not allowed to have a weapon of any kind. She's legally licensed to carry a gun. I would encourage her to carry a gun. Her pharmacy got robbed a few months back. They stole almost $1.5 million worth of drugs, and they never even had to display a weapon. They hopped a counter, took what they wanted to take, and they left because the chain ownership said, don't fight, don't resist, don't just let them have what they want to have. Insurance will pay for it. There are people that will come into your office and kill you for 50 pills of oxycodone and walk out and not blink. So if you have somebody in your office who's willing to take the training anywhere in the country that can at least legally carry, and they legally can carry in your business if you give them written permission to. Okay. I would encourage it 100%. Whether or not you want the other patients and stuff to know, it's entirely up to you. There's a lot of people that see a whole. I went to a restaurant once and I had a shirt on for a John Wick movie and it had two Glock pistols on it. And a woman at the next table was like, "Oh, Mary, I can't sit here. He's got pictures of his guns on his shirt. We have to move." And they went and sat someplace else in the restaurant. And in my world, that's the trash taking itself out. But, you know, their guns make people nervous. So you kind of have to figure out what the balance is for your business. But I'm all about it. I think teachers should be armed.
I tell you, I'm on the entertaining side of that. Like, Pam, can you imagine how well your patients would behave if you just walked in the room and you just set your Glock down on the counter and smiled and said, "Today we're going to do"? People would fall in line.
This is the 44 Magnum. It's the most powerful handgun in the world.
You think that stuff can hurt? Here you go. But on the serious side, I think the other thing for me that I think of is, one, the training is super important, but two, probably the willingness that if you really had to use it, that you wouldn't hesitate. Because what makes me really nervous is having somebody armed who, when push comes to shove, is may let somebody take that weapon from them, and then the situation escalates.
Yes, they absolutely have to have the self-awareness to know that. And again, I go back to when I was teaching rape awareness and defense. We had women come in and they're like, I don't think I could be violent to somebody else to prevent this from happening. And I'm like, well, that's your outlook. If you want to be a willing victim. But yes, it has to be somebody. If there's no sense having the ability to do harm if you don't have the willingness to do the harm.
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, we've talked about this how many times, office outings, different activities. What about a self-defense course? I mean, that sounds like something that would be fantastic for a dental team to do together. Have you ever even heard of that?
Well, I mean, the self-defense courses, yes.
No. Like a dental team being like, "I'm going to talk about how to keep yourself safe," you know, and talk about different instances where you need to heighten your awareness. I feel like that is a really great
We talked about it. So 2 years ago, the Officer Media Group, my publisher, Bill McCray, and I had a whole conversation because I've taught this stuff for forever. I've been an instructor since 1989. And we talked about actually creating a service where I could go to business buildings, dental offices, opticians. My best friend's wife owns two optical practices in California. And he's like, "Come out here and show these people what to do." And I'm like, "Dude, you can do that as well as I can. I don't need an excuse to go to Fountain Valley, but okay." I'd be delighted to go out and do these trainings, and it absolutely should be done. Have I heard about it? No, because 99% of the people are too busy being, "It can't happen here." They're in denial.
Man, I got to tell you, Pam, I'm not sure why I'm today years old and you just brought that concept and I've never thought about that before, but Frank, I would be willing to bet that Pam and I could go to a half a dozen major trade shows in dentistry and pitch that course, and that would it would be one of the first courses to fill up. Don't you think, Pam?
Say when.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And you have an open invite in Salem, Massachusetts. I'd love to have you here telling everybody how to kick the shit out of people.
Well, understand something though. That's, and I love the phraseology, but that's not what it really is. It's about awareness. It's about the prevention. And then it's about when you get to the point where you absolutely have to do the harm, how to do it efficiently and effectively and walk away when you've done what you need to do. So it's like when I taught my kids about bullying in school, you know, you walk away first if you can walk away, and you talk your way out of it if you can't walk away. But if you can't walk away and you can't talk your way out of it, you better win, and you better do it with speed and violence of aggression. You want the fight over really fast. Now, you guys are dentists, you're doctors, you know how to kill people super efficient. Like, it might take 40 seconds because the sanguination doesn't happen like that, but y'all can make it happen pretty quick. I'd love to come teach you classes, but the biggest thing is the 2/3 of the class, 80% of the classes, don't get put in the bad spot in the first place, and then recognize when you don't have any other choice, strike hard, strike fast, and know the legal limits, right? That's the biggest challenge. After you've put this person in a position of they can't do you any harm, you have a civic duty to give them medical care. So after you've cut their femoral artery and they've bled out and they're unconscious, you better be able to get the tourniquet on and hold them for the paramedics. You know what I'm saying? There's a very fine line. But I'll come to Salem, Massachusetts in a heartbeat, be glad to teach a class for you. Whole different conversation we have that's not being recorded about expenses and travel.
No problem. We'll send it to Endeavor. I'm sure they'd love that. Oh my goodness. Well, Frank, this was extremely eye-opening and I can't believe how quickly this time has gone by. And yeah, can you tell everybody about your podcast in case they're interested in, you know, not always listening to dental things?
So we have Officer Roll Call, which actually covers a couple of different series of podcasts. Officer Roll Call is every other week about our magazine content, usually. There's The Lineup, which is every Friday, and it's a discussion between myself and our news editor, Joe Vince. And we talk about the hot news topics in law enforcement for the week, edit commentary, so to speak. We have a series called Command Q&A, where Paul Peluso talks to a chief or a sheriff about something that's challenging in law enforcement. And that's not as regular every other month, I think. But we have a really cool one called Undercover Dad. Our news editor, Joe Vince's father, is a retired ATF agent out of Detroit. And he's done a series of interviews with his dad about what it was like to work in the Detroit in the 70s and undercover. So Undercover Dad, but they're all there and they're all available on Podbean and all the other outlets. And we really have a good time doing them.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. I know I'll be following you. This is so interesting. David, let's take it home.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Frank, Undercover Dad, we'll have an offline conversation about that one. Thank you so much for all this. This has been eye-opening. I had literally three aha moments in our time together, and I will absolutely follow up on dental trade shows, because I can promise you you're going to be busier than you want to be if you really want to be that busy. So everybody who's been here, thanks for hanging out with us. Frank, thanks for being here. Pam, it's always great to be here with you, and till next week, we'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for watching or listening to the show this week. And thanks to our guests and sponsors on this episode.
Please check out our social media at Dr. Pamela_Maragliano and at Dental Economics Official.
Or you can check me out at Ignite DDS or at Dr. David Rice.
And go to DentalEconomics.com to receive Dental Economics. You can choose to receive DE in print or digitally. And you can also get the details of our Principles of Practice Management Conference on our website.
If you have topics or guests or anything you'd like to talk about on the show, send us an email to dentistryunmaskedpodcast@gmail.com, and we will do our very best to make it happen. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.